educators started talking about how important it was to be able to learn how to look and understand at how images communicate and carry meaning in the complex ways that they do. Then came your community, librarians, and you had another new literacy back in the 1970s when you had a brand new, way cool technology that was reshaping the nature of literacy. That technology was powerful and unfamiliar to most of us. And so we needed new competencies and skills to be able to manage it. What was that new technology of the 1970s that gave librarians the impetus to invent the concept of information literacy? It was the database. Whoa! Because the database required new kinds of skills and competencies, new kinds of strategies for searching, finding, and evaluating information. Then in the 80s came the media literacy educators. Media literacy educators started to gain some traction after the cable revolution brought us 500 channels and nothing to watch. As we started to realize that messages were being distributed to us within a political and economic context that meant that some kinds of TV shows were plentiful and others were scarce and hard to find. Then in the 90s rose the computer literacy folks. These were the folks who recognized that when you have a microprocessor at your desktop, you needed a set of skills to be able to use that tool. That if you didn't know file management and weren't sure exactly where you were saving things to, that if you weren't sure of the difference between hardware and software, you were going to be at a profound disadvantage in using that powerful tool. And so computer educators came together to think about the competencies you were required to master this communications technology. Also in the 90s, we saw the rise of critical literacy. The educators who were helping us understand how embedded in the exchange of ideas, the exchange of information and ideas to share meaning, were fundamental power relationships. Power relationships that maintain the status quo or provide opportunities to transform the world. And that to be a effective reader and writer, one needed to be able to understand how power is embodied in messages and how inequalities may get reproduced through the way messages flow in a culture. Recently, we've seen the rise of a group of educators who identify with the news literacy concept, as we've seen a fundamental sort of rethinking of what journalism is now that it might not be that paper copy of the New York Times. Thinking about how readers and users of information need a set of skills to be able to decide what to believe in when it comes to news and current events. And that brings us to digital literacy. And to tell you the truth, what it means? Well, that's why we're here. It's an emerging concept. And so in some senses, it's a contested idea. And in a way, it's an idea that's built on this long legacy, this expansion of the concept of literacy. So, in order to provoke the panelists into discussion and to engage your curiosity as well, I thought I would put a, I don't know, what's that called? Put a stake in the ground and say, Renee thinks digital literacy is this, and see what you think of it, what you agree with or what you disagree with, right? What parts of this definition you like or what's omitted? And that'll be the subject of our discussion today. All right, let's begin. Well, let's take it on the authority of the Digital Literacy Task Force. Raise your hand if you're a member of this group or been involved in this conversation. Look around. Thank you. Well, you guys said, I think it was last year, right? You guys said digital literacy is the ability to use information and communication technologies to find, evaluate, create, and communicate information requiring both cognitive and technical skills. That's okay. Doesn't get me very far. As a person who tries to work at the grassroots level to do things. So let's bring it down. Down to where we live in our work as academic librarians, school librarians, public librarians, and special librarians. And let's think about the concept of digital literacy broadly to include those other stakeholders who care about this topic. Creative people, technology businesses, government, activists. Let's think about them as well. I'm going to argue that there are four definitions of digital literacy that revolve around clusters of competencies. Use and share, create and collaborate, analyze and evaluate, and apply ethical judgment. Let's talk about the first one. Tool use and access skills. We're definitely aware how keyboard and mouse skills and hardware storage and file management practices and understanding hyperlinking in digital space are important fundamental competencies to being able to use the tools at all. But we also know that it's important to gain competence with software applications and use social media, mobile, peripheral, and cloud computing tools. And to do any of that, you have to have access to broadband. We think part of tool use and access skill includes being able to identify your information needs and use effective search and find strategies. And more metacognitive than that is the ability to troubleshoot and problem solve when things go wrong and to engage in that cycle that we're all on right now. The continuing, lifelong learning how to learn that is a fundamental practice to participating in a digital media culture today. But let's not leave this last set of ideas out of this quadrant of digital literacy. If you don't have listening skills, the Khan Academy videos are going to do you no good at all. And if you don't have reading comprehension skills, you're not going to be able to do very much at all when it comes to accessing information. So fundamentally, this cluster of digital literacy competencies is about using the tools and being able to access information, ideas, and resources. Let's talk about the second quadrant, the quadrant I'm calling authorship and creative competencies. By this, I mean all of the ways in which digital technology is making us writers in every sense of that word. At the fundamental level, that's recognizing the need for communication and self-expression. And we know that right now in the new digital divide, we have folks who recognize the importance of communication and expression and step fully into that sphere, and other folks who really don't feel so comfortable expressing and communicating in online context and prefer just to read the web instead of write it. Then there's the whole cluster of creative competencies at the heart of multimedia composition. Identifying your purpose, your target audience, your medium, and your genre. Being able to brainstorm and generate ideas and compose creatively, not just that cut and paste stuff, but compose creatively, to work collaboratively, to edit and revise, to use appropriate distribution, promotion, and marketing channels, and to receive audience feedback. This is the fundamental process of creating or composing. And I used to call it production. But I don't anymore. Why? Production sounds so cookbook-ish, so mechanical, when in fact, this is a creative authorship competence. And we have to understand it at its root as that kind of creativity. What's exciting is now the concept of authorship and creative competencies are being expanded to include the ability to play and interact, to comment, to curate, and to remix. So the concept of authorship is undergoing this expansion itself as we think about what it means to make messages. That's partly why you're here. It's so exciting to be able to create in this way, in these ways, in these many ways. Let's talk about the third quadrant that I've identified, which I call understanding issues of representation. Of course, even the words I choose reflect my disciplinary background in communication, and that phrasing might be different in different disciplines and fields, but here's what I mean by it. At the fundamental level, it's something you librarians know well. In order to understand how symbols work in a society, you have to understand the relationship between the symbol and the thing the symbol stands for. You have to recognize, right, that all of the knowledge products that we create are representations of something else. But then, to do that job of analyzing and evaluating means identifying the author, the genre, and the purpose and the point of view of a message, compare and contrast sources, evaluate credibility and quality, and understand one's own biases and worldview. We're starting to come to understand just how powerfully we seek information to confirm what we already believe. And we disregard information that challenges or contradicts our beliefs. So a more metacognitive and reflective position, understanding our own biases and worldview, is an essential part of being digitally literate. More abstractly is understanding how information flows in culture, recognizing power relationships that shape how information and ideas circulate in our society, understanding the economic context of information and entertainment production, and examining the political and social ramifications of inequalities in information flows. To truly analyze and evaluate the digital culture that we live in, we need to reflect on those the ways in which power is represented through information flows in our culture. And finally, the quadrant I call online social responsibility and digital citizenship. Not sure which of those I like, so I put them both in, right? Maybe there's a better term altogether. At some level, I see this quadrant as acknowledging the power of communication to either maintain the status quo or change the world. The idea that communication matters and that it has consequences at the personal level, at the interpersonal level, at the neighborhood level, at the national and international level is at the heart of understanding why digital literacy matters to so many stakeholders. But for sure, this quadrant wants to help people understand how differences in values and life experience shape people's media use and their message interpretation. That this part of digital literacy wants us to appreciate the risks and the potential harms of digital media, and to apply ethical judgment and social responsibility to online communication situations. And finally, to understand how concepts of private and public are being reshaped by digital media, and to appreciate and respect legal rights and responsibilities like copyright, intellectual freedom, and the list could go on and on. So, there in a nutshell is a definition of digital literacy. You can see why we have a lot to talk about. What a gigantic elephant of a definition. So we're here to talk a little bit about what digital literacy means in the context and situations we work in. And for that, I'd like to introduce our panelists. First, let me introduce Judy Kleinberg. She's a program director at the Knight Foundation, technology leader, and former mayor of Palo Alto, California. Next, we have Roseanne Cordell. academic librarian at Indiana University South Bend, an activist herself in the area of environmental sustainability, and chairman of the Digital Literacy Task Force for the American Library Association. And finally, we have Laurel Felt, a doctoral student at the Annenberg School of Communication and Journalism. She was involved in developing the curriculum for the project called Play, Participatory Learning
and You.
And she also does some consulting for the Shoah Foundation. All right, I guess I'll turn it over to the panelists. So why are you interested in digital literacy, and what's your personal connection to it? Who'd like to start?
Go ahead.
I'll start. Thank you. Thank you so much, Renee. Isn't Renee an inspiring speaker? Yeah. Thank you. Well, I was struck, actually, by how powerfully Renee spoke and what a good job she did of being an educator, which made me think that I wanted to try my best to emulate. And so I'd like to speak a little bit less about me. To learn about me, I welcome you to go to laurelfelt.org. I'd love to learn a little bit about you. I think that participation is what digital literacy is all about. So let's find out who we are. If you identify yourself as a librarian, please raise your hand. Excellent. If you identify yourself as an educator, please raise your hand. If you identify yourself as an artist, please raise your hand. If you identify yourself as
an activist,
please raise your hand. If you identify yourself as a government employee or somehow a vessel of government who enacts a public will, if you're part of the tech industry, please raise your hand. If you're part of the entertainment industry, please raise your hand. It's the hometown industry. I came in from LA. Excellent. Thank you so much. If you feel confused about digital literacy, please raise your hand. Yeah, that's why we're here. I'm not sure we're going to walk away with it all clear as a bell, but hopefully we'll be a little bit further along, and hopefully we'll feel more empowered to engage in a conversation and to have a jumping off point. If you feel confused about what it's going to take in order for your institution to be prepared for the 21st century, please raise your hand. If you're not sure how best to serve children, please raise your hand. It's murky, right? I was looking at the definition that Renee shared, and it's sprawling, and comprehensive and inspiring. And I have to admit that as she was talking, I went to laurelfelt.org and I edited my homepage. And I changed one of my terms from new literacies to digital literacy. Because before I thought I'd found a nuance, and I thought new literacy was the better umbrella to encapsulate all sorts of different ideas. But when she articulated everything that she found to be salient to digital literacy, I thought that was the best umbrella you could find. And I feel like those two things that occurred, this evolving idea of what it is that we're talking about and this ability to change our online representation and to do it at a moment's notice, is all part of a new culture that is remarkably different from even the one that I grew up with, and I'm 32. Which is old to kids today. It's even old to my college students. I've got, 10 years on the oldest ones. I think that when we're evaluating digital literacy, what we need to remember at the same time is that people are people at our hearts. And we sometimes feel intimidated by all of these tools. But people are tool-using creatures. That's how we've defined man. In a classical anthropology sense. And just because the tools have changed doesn't mean that we have to throw away the baby with the bathwater and that the world is falling apart. We just have to figure out how to master these tools for our own ends and not let them rule us. So I guess I'll just use that as my point of departure.
Thank you. Roseanne?
Okay. I'm Roseanne Cordell and an academic librarian, but I was asked to serve on the panel because I'm pretty solidly in the library profession. I was an elementary school teacher, a high school librarian, and I have worked in public libraries too. So I have a good idea of what many of you do. And my view of digital literacy is that it is very closely related to some of the other literacies that were listed, particularly information literacy and basic literacy. But it has some of its own concerns and own areas. Libraries have very important roles in bringing digital literacy to Americans of all ages. School and academic libraries probably would do that in a fairly formal process and come up with the basic skills and concepts that they want their students to master and would go through a formal process if they could, and hold that thought. Public libraries fit the same bill, but for a broader audience and answering specific community needs. So we're all needed in this area, but digital literacy is way beyond just how do I do this? How do I save my file? How do I access my shared drive? How do I access what's on a flash drive? It involves concepts, and there are concepts that we want all of our American citizens to be able to think about and discuss. Things like, why is privacy important? What role does it play in a democracy? What historical and constitutional bases are there for our need for privacy or our want for privacy? How is privacy protected in an age of international terrorism? What types of information are presented on the internet? What is information? What is misinformation? How is that different from disinformation? What is propaganda? What are our responsibilities to others when we create and share information? What are their responsibilities to us? What's the role of government in protecting us and facilitating communication? I think keeping up with technologies allows users to access, share, and create information freely. But all of this is a significant prerequisite for civic engagement today. And that's the bottom line. Digital literacy is one of the essential areas of education for everyone.
Well, I think the reason I'm on the panel is because I'm not a librarian, never have been, but maybe the next job will be a librarian. But I am an attorney. I come out of the tech sector, and you just found out that I was the mayor of the best city in the world. Sorry. Also very active with the Chamber of Commerce. But let me just say that the Knight Foundation is really interested in the concrete outcomes of any of this conversation that we're having and about the role that you play and the institutions play in, you know, what Roxanne was just saying, which is, so what? What do we get out of it? How are we better? How is our country better? How is everyone in it better off because we are improving these skills? And what role do libraries in the 21st century, in the information age, have? So the Knight Foundation, which is the largest funder in the country of journalism and new media is way beyond just news, as you know, because the Knight brothers owned the largest newspaper empire in the country at the time. We're really interested in supporting and creating informed and engaged communities. And so there's this continuum from the information, which we'll have lots of definitions about, and I'll leave it to all the definition people to give you those definitions, but from the information side to the engagement and the activism that comes between the two, from information leading to engagement, and then there's still the so what. Engaged for what? What does that get you? Well, we believe, and our grant making underscores this, that without the access to all the information that's available today, some of it is not digital, but more of it is, that without access to that information and the skills that people need to critically analyze, use, create, and share that information so that they can understand what's relevant to themselves, connect with others in their community or the affinity group that they choose to be a part of, and then act in their own best interest. Without that, you don't have a strong democracy. And it really is very much flag waving. It really is that we are in a country that values free speech and the free marketplace of ideas. Consequently, it's really important for people to learn how to analyze all that information, and it's a tsunami of information now. And anybody can create that information. You just mentioned disinformation and misinformation and all of the rest. Anybody can be a journalist, and should be, maybe. Peer-to-peer information, way back before we had the written word, was the way people got information. We're now back to doing that again, social media. Now it's online. But it's still the way people mostly get their information and trust the information giver. If you cut off access to information and the skills to evaluate that information, you are planting the seeds for tyranny. It's that serious. So what's our interest in libraries? We have a library initiative that is helping libraries around the country develop their infrastructure in order to access, to train, and help people gain information that's digital. But we are also, there's the so what. What we're really looking for is helping libraries reinvent themselves to continue to be critical, fundamental building block of democracy and to turn themselves inside out a little bit. So it's not just about being a place where you can access information, but being a place where you can create it and a place where you can share it so that the library of the 21st century becomes the trusted, neutral hub in the community, even more than the school. And you are the leaders of that revolution. And we're hopefully helping you get there.
Okay, so let's see if we can drill down on this issue of definition, which we said we would play with. I guess my question to the panelists is, do we really need a definition of digital literacy? Why or why not? If it is emerging, maybe we should just let it emerge. And so I'm curious about your take on what are the pros and cons of pinning down this sprawling set of concepts. And then my next question to the panelists is, should academic school and public librarians be responsible for all of this, or for some part of it, or what role should librarians play given the diverse stakeholders coming to circle around this concept?
I'll take a start down here for a moment.
Do
I'll
it.
I'm an attorney. I love words. but I will tell you from my background in law that the more you describe something, the more you put words to it, the more locked in you get to that, and it becomes inflexible. It doesn't evolve and change with, and you know, as librarians, all the new words that are now legitimate words, because language is changing all the time, and so is the word digital and what that means. For example, we have the biggest movement now is mobile technology, and we didn't really have an amazing movement towards mobile technology until recently. So, you know, I guess I would just tell an anecdote, which is that back in India, when before the British colonized India, they had a system of law. Sorry, I am a law professor. They had a system of law where they didn't write it down. The elders in every village knew it by word of mouth, passed it along, and ruled with fairness on squabbles and things of that sort. And then the British arrived and said, "What a wonderful system of law you have. We'll just write it down." That was the end. That was the end, because they wrote it down and it didn't have the human element anymore. So I would say, yes, let's define it, but let's make sure we remember to keep it flexible and growing and evolving.
And I think you're absolutely right. In order for this conversation to have any meaning, we have to have some broad boundaries or guidelines in which we discuss what digital literacy is. But we can't allow the discussion to stop the growth of the ideas, of the creativity of the people involved. Should librarians take an active and a leading role in this? Absolutely. Information is our field. It's the area in which we are experts. And digital literacy is all about creating, accessing, and sharing information. And so I think no one has the sensitivity to all of the issues and the ability to help people of all ages and all levels of ability grow in their digital literacy in the same ways that librarians do.
Hi, everyone. Renee instructed us to be provocative and to make this lively. So I'm going to throw a few provocations out there. I'm reminded of my studies in child development. And according to some, unless you have a word for something, unless you possess language, you can't see it, and you can't remember it. And some people say that lack of language is partially responsible for why very young children have no memory. It's not only that they're developing cognitively, but they're not sure how to discern or distinguish one object from another and tag it and file it in their brains so that they can pull it up later. So if we don't have a word for what digital literacy is, then how will we be able to see it when it's happening, or see it when it isn't happening, or begin to drill down on it? Sometimes by calling out all of the constituent things that occur in a process, we're able to give it more value. For example, sometimes people write off the occupation of housewife. But when you start to articulate what it takes to be a housewife, that you're actually a nurse, you're a chauffeur, you're a custodian, you're a therapist, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, well, that's a heck of a job. So I think that it could be very productive to put out some guidelines so we know what we're talking about and we have some things to aim towards. I recognize that language can be restricting, and so now it makes me want to re-edit my homepage, to tell you the truth. Now I want to say new literacies acknowledges that there's a march of progress that I think Renee threw up very eloquently on her slide, that literacies continue to emerge, and perhaps that's the umbrella term, and digital literacy is underneath it, and the word digital will keep on changing, but new will acknowledge that we evolve. In terms of what role librarians play, or what role teachers should play in part of this or all of it, I'd like to throw that back at you. So I invite you to take about 20 seconds to think about it, and then I'd like you to turn to your partner and discuss. So someone who's on your left or your right. Ready to start thinking?
And what are we discussing?
What role does a librarian play in supporting digital literacy? Okay. Turn on your thinking caps. Okay, and whenever you're ready, turn to somebody next to you, maybe you already have. Talk it out.
That's good. Okay, so now we give them a good 4 minutes, right? That's excellent. Excellent. Good teacher.
Oh, thank you. Good. I was thinking, what would this look like if it was 2.0?
Exactly. That's right. And then we'll have them call out. And we'll come to the mic. Excellent. Yeah, sure.
Perfect.
Good.
Thank you very much. This is my mentor.
We're sharing.
Yeah.
So my
That's right. I thought that was good, actually.
Right.
That's exactly right. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And so we have now, definitions have pros and cons. That's clear. So where we're going to go after we hear from them is gaps, silences, and omissions. Remember, that's what we talked about. So we do that once we... But I think if you be Oprah and moderate their sharing, that's really good. Because then that'll create new places for us to go in the conversation.
That's good.
Somebody should be taking photos.
Yeah. I'm recording. Yeah, do you want to take... I could turn my computer over. I go to so many conferences, and we can watch a lecture online, and we can read somebody's paper by downloading the PDF, but being able to talk to colleagues and network, that's the value added of a conference.
Yeah, absolutely. Why you might actually put the money in
And if you'd like, you and your partner can find another pair and make it a conversation of four.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, that's very nice.
Feel free to take that.
Do that.
She's going to be Oprah.
Okay.
Yeah, because you have your microphone there. And maybe they won't even need a microphone. Maybe you just ask them to stand up and introduce themselves, say their name or identity. People will see this as a good networking. Because they're still here, right?
Yeah.
All day tomorrow.
Absolutely. This is a very long conference. I saw you were at ISTE too. You're double dipping, huh?
I'm double dipping. I'm leaving tomorrow morning.
It's a lot.
And you, are you going to ISTE?
I think I'm probably not. My colleague at Shoah Foundation is presenting on Tuesday, and actually we won an award from this.
I saw that for Eyewitness,
really, yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly,
so
which is
cool.
What I'm working on.
Cool.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
so,
I saw them do the presentation last year
did
about
you?
It. It's really
I love that they're also expanding beyond just the Jewish genocide.
Yeah.
Because that's the ethos.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's not about us.
Yeah.
It's about we.
Yeah.
So, because Gail will be out, I'm going to be in the office. Yeah.
Cool. You'll be working.
You think, should I tell him to start wrapping up? Felt like we were losing them.
Yeah, exactly. This is good.
Are you familiar with?
Go ahead. Okay. Get up there. Go stand up there. Stand up there. Did you? You've already.
One, for those who are bold and interested in sharing in this space, I'd love a representative from your group to come up, introduce yourself, tell us what you were talking about.
And for those who don't have the time or think they can't get to the microphone or would rather not speak in public, do know that we have a hashtag on Twitter. It is #digilit, D-I-G-I-L-I-T.
12. Digilit 12.
Been doing it wrong.
It is
12. It's all saved. I can just copy and paste. So you can do #digilit12, so that's D-I-G-I-L-I-T 12, and share some of your impressions, some of your ideas in that space as well. This is the richness of the new digital world, right? But for now, let's maximize the fact that we're all together in one space. Who would like to come up and tell us what you were talking about? Come on up. And there's a microphone here. And I don't know if it's going to do anything. What, were our voices being amplified before?
Yes. Well, I was just talking with one other person. I'm kind of a semi-interesting situation.
Okay.
In that I work at Capella University, which is all online for-profit institution. So I'm kind of a, I always feel a little bit like alone in the crowd. Almost a lot, it's all the time. But, you know, as to the question, do I feel like we have a responsibility? Well, we were discussing, I said, absolutely. I mean, as an open admissions online for profit, we in the library definitely feel like it's not just, you know, that'd be nice to have. It's a must that we need to put it out there. But as my discussion partner was saying, it's the shared responsibility. I mean, especially with adult students like we have, they have to go out there and, you know, they have to watch the videos, they have to read the tutorials. But I feel like, anybody teaching any kind of online or hybrid course, I do feel like it's at the very least that shared responsibility that if you're bringing people into this platform, you need to have, you need to make available the tools to help them understand how to use all the other tools out there. What gets difficult is, sorry, I'm laughing. what gets difficult though is with any kind of learner is when they need information, they feel even more overwhelmed, you know, the studies that I've read, then they feel even more overwhelmed when you give them more information than the information that they think they need. So that just invites another question of how best to present the information in a way that is timely and, you know, at point of view.
It's true. Thank you, Kim. So I'd love to invite somebody else to come up, and I'm just going to reiterate what I heard while that person comes. Who would like to come next? Okay, so what, great, thank you. What I heard from Kim was the idea of shared responsibility, that we're all in this together, but I feel like I also heard an ethic of sort of responsibility or stewardship, that if we are going to offer something to them, it implies a sort of hierarchy, then we have to be able to sort of scaffold that experience, which is interesting. And then the question of pedagogy, so how best to teach and not overwhelm. These are great questions. Thank you, Kim.
Well, hello, everyone. Pam, have my back to you all. So in our discussion group, we talked about the fact that because of the magnitude of what digital literacy is all about and the role that libraries have, it's something, like you said, that we cannot do it alone. And we discussed the importance of collaboration and working with our community partners and stakeholders, whether government, academics, schools, business, in order to make it happen. We also discussed the fact that whether we want to take on the roles, we are forced to do that because of the demand that we have within our libraries and our institutions for folks who really need these services. And then I think the third aspect that we discussed was the fact that, you know, this is only one aspect of literacy. We work with lots of different populations who have a need for language literacy and helping folks first to understand the language and then as a next step understanding digital literacy. So it was those three areas that our group discussed.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Nicole. I feel like everyone in this room could be up on this panel. Very brilliant ideas. So what I heard from that is the notion of coalition building and trying to form vibrant relationships, hopefully steeped in understanding, respect, functional communication with all of the stakeholders who Renee articulated. There's also the idea of sort of being forced into a corner, if you will. It's not a question of want to, it's a question of have to. That the ground is shifting beneath our feet and we need to respond. And I feel like I also heard the idea of preparation, that in order to be able to access some of these higher order skills most productively, there are some other skills that are necessary in order to get there. So you need to be able to use language, and my bias is that you need to have social and emotional competence, self-awareness, self-regulation, social awareness, relationship skills, and responsible decision-making. So those are the things that help to set the stage intrapersonally and interpersonally for productive work of all sorts. So where does that fit into the mix? Does that happen while we're doing digital literacy work? Does that happen before it? Now I'm going on my own tangent. You didn't say all.
Take two more comments, Laurel, okay. And then we'll move on.
All right. Well, Judy had a great question. Remember your aha?
Oh,
yeah.
My question was for you. Did you, in your conversation, come to some clarity, some aha moment? What was that aha that you didn't have before you started that little conversation with your neighbor?
Here we go.
Come up to the microphone and share your aha.
Here's my aha.
Let's hear it.
Here,
I'm going to flip the script.
Right,
Beautiful.
That all the digital technology and tools we're using are changing the way we work, and the people we work with and the people we work for are going to have to adjust to new behavior that they may see it rude, off-putting, they may not understand gestures like a few in a minute, and other equivalents that translate to our technology use.
That's a great aha. Thanks for sharing.
Thanks, Jennifer. Hop on up.
So our aha moment was almost the opposite of that.
Yes, that's lively.
As librarians, we've always dealt in information, whether that's in a clay tablet, or in a book, on a scroll, in a CD-ROM, or today on the internet. We're still connecting people and information. And although the modes have changed, at our heart, we have the same values. We're still trying to do the same things.
Excellent, thank you. They're with our program, Renee. They're trying to be provocative.
Are there a couple more ahas?
Yes. Take it, Mary Alice.
I had an aha. It was after our discussion. It was Cecil Lucent, school librarian, where, you know, she's worried about her students. They know the technology better than she does. And I guess I just feel like it, and I've taught in library school, and I believe we have to do things differently. I mean, we have to always be ready to humiliate ourselves.
Amen.
You know? Because we're not going to learn, and we're not going to model that behavior, that you can dare to do something that you don't have a clue how to do.
Yeah. Wonderful insight. Last aha.
Mine is, and it was my own, sorry, the group, and we didn't talk about this, but my aha moment is that we have to fight for the things that we need to make this happen. We've had to fight for books, banned books, we have people wanting 50 Shades of Grey off the shelf, all the kind of stuff we fight for. We have to fight for these readers. I can tell you, for 5 years, it's like, e-readers, somebody listen to me. So I finally had to scream it. We need e-readers. And you know what I did? I went out and bought them myself so I could teach. And that's sometimes what we have to do to make it happen. Now, when I bought them, I started teaching them. It became the most popular class. The library's buying them now. But sometimes we have to scream and yell and kick our feet to get the tools we need to teach the things that people need to learn.
Absolutely wonderful. So, in a way now, we want to address kind of the consequences of that aha moment, which is, what are the gaps, the challenges, the silences, and the omissions around what we talk, what we say about digital literacy, and what exists in practice? So I think it's important for us to be real, that there's a lot of hype on this topic. Okay, the tech industry is telling us everything will be great and glorious if only you get that latest new thing. And we all kind of want to believe that's true. And we want to see ourselves as in the game with digital literacy. But we all recognize the gap between our aspirations and where we are right now with the practice. So I'm going to ask the panel members to talk a little bit about how you see the gaps, the challenges, the silences, and the omissions. Because once we get some precision and clarity about that, then we can figure out what to do about it. Judy?
Well, again, I talking to my technology here. Is this really on?
Yep.
Okay. All right. One of the gaps, obviously, is infrastructure. How many of you are from Silicon Valley? Wow, I'm all alone. So let me tell you, Silicon Valley has one of the worst digital divides in the world. Most of the schools and libraries do not have computers or access to the internet. And I can see all your jaws dropping. All right. So talk about a gap. That's a big gap. Of 44 K-12 schools that were surveyed in the San Jose and Silicon Valley region, one had broadband access. I have a grant right now to a game design company from New York that is teaching digital literacy and civic skills in the schools, and they've had to buy all the computers for the schools. And that's using up our money in a way that doesn't really produce the product. We're really looking for the product. So one gap is, and I always have to point to this, one gap is just the money, which somebody just mentioned. You have to fight for this. You have to fight not only to be able to provide access to all the information that's out there, but you have to fight for your budgets. And you have to fight, you know, well, you don't have to fight, but you'd be very lucky if you have a library foundation, you know, friends of your library. If you don't have one, get one started right away. And in some communities that are well off, you're going to have plenty of those friends. And in other communities, ones that, for example, Knight Foundation focuses on a lot, there isn't that capacity. So that's one big gap. It's just the infrastructure. And number two, you don't want to spend much money on that infrastructure because now everything's in the cloud. And the technology is changing so fast. So, you know, you're torn in between these two things. And then another gap, but the big one that I want to talk about, is the fact that in many communities, and particularly in immigrant and low-income communities, there is a value proposition gap where the people who should be learning those digital skills, who could use them for jobs and education and connection with their community and knowing what the schools are about and keeping track of the school board and local elections and all of that, they don't see any need to learn those digital skills. They have a telephone. They figure that mobile technology is all they need. Jankowski issued a report about this recently, which really drills down into this issue of we're all sitting here trying to figure out how we're going to be 21st century librarians and 21st century information hubs and community centers, and a lot of the people in your neighborhoods, if you're in challenged neighborhoods, do not necessarily even think that that's what you should be doing because they don't see the value proposition in learning those digital skills. They just want to use their smartphone, and that's all they think they need. Now, creating a lesson of how that value really exists for them is one of the challenges. So I think I'll just talk about those few gaps and let others talk about some others.
Thank you so much, Roseanne. Where do you see the gaps, the challenges, the silences, and the omissions?
One of the gaps for school and academic libraries is organizational. School libraries do have this lack of technology, but that's not usually the case in academic settings. They have the technology available to them. They have good connections. They have lots of applications available. What they don't have in either case is any control over the curriculum. And so if you really want digital literacy to be a basic part of your core curriculum, you have to work with other constituencies and you have to advocate. You have to be the initiator for a lot of these activities and start talking and using your marketing skills. Because others don't see these issues as broadly as we do. They see small parts of them, and you can bring teams together that may be able to work with you on these issues. But by yourself, you're not going to be able to do much. Like having to buy the e-readers yourself in order to get anything going. That's a big issue.
Laurel, how do you see the gaps, the silences, and the omissions between what we aspire to do with digital literacy and where we really are right now in 2012?
I have to stand up. I used to do improv comedy. I still sort of do. So what I'm feeling like are some of the gaps are passion and fun. If you feel like we're being too serious overall, turn to your partner and give them a high five. Renee? You know, the way that every child learns is through play. And we spend so much of our time as adults seeking out entertainment and pleasure. And information can be a pleasure. And engaging in digital spaces can be a place where we experience flow, which is when you lose grasp of who you are, where you are, and you're just immersed and you lose yourself. Isn't that a great feeling? That's how some people feel when they play a game, when they're playing music, when they're reading a good book, you librarians, probably you guys, when you're watching a movie. And I think that it can be how people feel when they come to the library or when they're sitting in a classroom. But I feel like we're making this all really scary and we're making it all really technical. And we need to lower the barrier a little bit and allow people to play more, to touch tools, to see what happens when you touch this, when you go here. And I think that in order to liberate the pedagogical process that you'd spoken about earlier, and avoid the information overload, what we need to do is to encourage people to play and to go find the answers to their own questions and trust that they're going to do that in a way that feels safe and comforting and even enjoyable. Maybe only 10% of us raised our hands when I asked if we're artists. Every kindergartner is an artist. So what happened? And now that we all have these creation tools, what excuse do we have? I think that we can aspire to bring back some of the passion and the fun and the play. And that can be very meaningful, and it can help us to collaborate better, to lead healthier, happier lives, and to optimize the potential of digital tools and of analog tools. Because to get ready for interacting in digital spaces, you don't necessarily need one of these. And by the way, this costs $130 a month. It's ridiculous. Right? You know, in order to do some of the things that are most important online, like seeing what happens if you do something different, you can do that with a peer. You can do that with a ball. You can do that with a book if you open to any page and have to read the first line. So that's sort of an improv game. But you see what I'm saying, that in order to ramp up for using the digital space productively, there's a lot of great things we can do with no money down on the ground in an analog way. And that can actually be harder than buying a computer, changing the way that we think and the way that we do things. Some thoughts.
Wow, how fascinating. So now I'm going to ask the panelists to pretend that you have a magic wand. Here it is.
your magic wand, but it's a realistic magic wand in the age of an economic recession, double digit unemployment, and the realities, all the realities of 2012. When I pass you the magic wand, you are granted one wish, and it will come true. But it has to be a realistic, doable wish. If you could wave your magic wand and do one thing, Judy, what would it be and why? With the goal of making all Americans digitally literate. That's what we're talking about here. Don't ask for $1 million.
Well, now, wait a minute. Really, I used to teach law, and I used to put a dollar sign on the board. It didn't matter what I was teaching, what subject matter. If they didn't understand how money played a part, I told them, raise their hands real fast. So unfortunately, we do have to talk about money. So I would say that my magic wand is going to change the attitudes of those that are responsible for budgets in our communities. And if they're academic budgets, then it's an academic community. But that those budgets provide the support, both in-service training support, leadership support, and we'll get to infrastructure eventually, but all of the building blocks that libraries need to be able to be that 21st century community hub that helps people get together, to get the information they need, to become socially connected, to build networked communities where your library is, so that it continues to be relevant as, I think, the most critical, important asset in a community in the 21st century.
Roseanne, you're waving your magic wand.
I am.
Making one thing happen. What is it?
The one thing that I really want to happen for personal reasons as well as societal is universal access, universal high-speed access immediately. The marketplace hasn't done it for us. The marketplace has gone about as far as it's going to go at any speed, and it's going to take a long time for a large part of our country to get high-speed access if we're relying only on the marketplace to get there. The federal government stepped in and provided electrification and landline telephone service, you know, nationwide when the marketplace wasn't doing it. And that's what has to happen here. I live... My address is South Bend, Indiana. Have you ever heard of South Bend, Indiana? What's your context?
That's where I
cheer for. Yeah, absolutely, Notre Dame. We have probably a dozen colleges and universities with the address South Bend, Indiana. Notre Dame actually has changed its address to Notre Dame, Indiana, but it's still in South Bend, Indiana. And so we have students, we have faculty, we have staff all over the county and beyond. And guess what? I live 2 miles outside the city limits, and I do not have access to high-speed internet. In any way, the best I can do is satellite. It's satellite or it's dial-up. Those are my only choices. And satellite can be very expensive if that's the route you are going. Comcast doesn't go out there. AT&T doesn't go out there. Frontier hasn't gone out there. Nothing goes out there. And, you know, outside of the city, we still have a lot of farmland. It's still a rural area outside of the city. And those areas and those people need access too.
Laurel, you're waving that magic wand, that realistic magic wand, and it's giving you only one wish. It's granting you one wish. What is that wish that's going to come true?
I wish for more wishes. I'm thinking about libraries. I love libraries. I always have. My grandma was a librarian. My mom worked at the college library when she was a student. When I graduated from college, I worked for a library. And I was in a really interesting panel this morning, and they're talking about how they're striving to declutter their libraries, make their shelves lower, get rid of some of their reference collection because it's still online, and what that opens is space. Space to do, space to connect with one another. And I would love to see more spaces to play, with librarians being the champions of play, because play is really the scientific process, and it's bathed in information. One of my mentors, Henry Jenkins, and his colleagues define new media literacy play as the ability to experiment with your surroundings as a form of problem solving. So seeing what happens when you do something. And I think that that's inquiry. It's, I wonder what will happen. You examine it critically. You're a keen observer. You note what occurs. You catalog it. Perhaps that leads you to apply it in a certain way, to unpack it a little bit further, to ask another question. That's research. It's also play. The two reinforce one another. In urban environments and rural environments, we're seeing an erosion of playgrounds. And a lot of people worry that the entry of digital into our lives means that we're becoming automatons, that we're not using our bodies, that we're not using our brains. We're just kind of being dulled and passively consuming. It would be amazing to push back at that and to bring back play, to bring back activity with our whole bodies, with our whole minds, and for libraries to be a haven for that, and for librarians to lead the way with tools that we can play with that include really serious technical things like a computer, and that also might be kind of playful and will help to unlock creativity and lead to questions like toys and puzzles and sensory things. I led a workshop with City Year, and you wouldn't believe what kinds of ideas people came up with when I gave them a whole bunch of animal figurines. Well, I mean, they were stunned. What am I doing with these animal figurines giving to you adults? But they used it to model some of the issues that they had with their communities, and it helped them to think outside the box. And that's what we're all trying to do, right? Innovation, that's the way forward. So that's what I would love for libraries to do, to really honor and embrace and forward play.
Okay, so now it's your turn. You want every citizen, every person you reach in your role as a librarian to be digitally literate. And I'm giving you the magic wand, one realistic wish. Come up to the microphone and share with us what you wish for, what would help you create digitally literate library patrons, learners, citizens in the place where you do your best work.
I don't know who to face, sorry.
Talk to your peers.
Yeah. Well, this addresses the gap question you talked about earlier. So I think for a starting place for me personally, I'd like to see digitally literate librarians.
All right, do I have four more wishes in the room? Come up, be loud, be proud, share your wish.
I'm going to second that motion. I would like Laurel to come and train my staff.
That's wish number two. You've got three more wishes. Who's coming to the microphone?
I work with deaf people, and I wish that all digital formats were accessible to deaf people and people with other types of disabilities.
Mm. Only a few more wishes are remaining. Come to the microphone and share your realistic magic wish.
Let me help you along.
suppose the Knight Foundation was going to give you a grant to make that wish come true.
Well played.
I wish that we could develop a universal usability system to address people with not only disabilities of all sorts, but advanced research levels, so that people are interacting with computers at a level that matches their skills.
Thank you for sharing. And one more, please.
I wish we'd get over thinking that 95% is good enough. Mm-hmm. That's 15 million. That could be the entire Pacific Northwest if we look at it that way. So 100%, nothing less.
Okay, I'd like to ask Marika and Lara if you'll pass out those index cards. Some of you know that one of the most useful things you can do when you do an engagement like this is get people to reflect and ask questions. So there's index cards coming around, and you won't be allowed to leave the room without handing in what we call the exit ticket. Raise your hand if you've used an exit ticket before. Very useful little evaluation tool. Don't let them leave until they offer feedback. On one side of the index card, I'd like you to write your takeaway sentence. Summarize what you got out of this in a brief sentence or so. And on the back of the index card, write a question that you're leaping with. One takeaway message on the front side of the card, and on the back side of the card, a question that you're leaping with. Let's just take about 3 minutes to do that work.
Awesome. This is going to be great data.
This is going to be great data.
We need to post it where people can.
You know what? Renee, if they want to, if they put their email address, if there was a follow-up question or idea, if they were willing to put their email address.
You have about 1 minute for me. All right, looks like you're mostly finishing up. So at this point, I'd like to give the panelists a round of applause for sharing their insights.
Thank you, Renee.
I don't know about the final say, but there was one other thing that we just wanted to be able to share with you. friend here from the Communications Commission that wanted to talk a little bit about a program that does relate to digital literacy that's going to be rolling out in the coming 6 months. So just kind of a quick announcement to folks to let you know what's coming. And thanks, Jordan, for being here with us to talk about the digital literacy and accessibility initiative.
Thank you, Lyra. And this is a wonderful panel. So glad to make it today. Really interesting. I learned a lot. So many interesting things going on. The 20,000 librarians, I wish I could meet all of you, but I only have time to meet a few dozen. But I see about 5 or 7 people that were here at 8 a.m. this morning with me. So glad to see you guys made it. And I don't bore you with this talk again. My name is Jordan Huzdan, and I work for the Federal Communications Commission. And I want to give you a 5-minute clip note version of a nonprofit collaboration about digital literacy and broadband adoption called Connect Compete, which is going to be rolling out nationwide starting this fall and early next year. The brief history here is that when I joined the FCC in 2009, Chairman Jenikowski took the helm of the FCC. We drafted what was called the National Broadband Plan. And Tom Kowski, who Connect Today was part of the team, he now left the FCC, but we're still friends. And what the plan said is, first of all, the point, 95% is not sufficient. I agree with the man who said that a few minutes. And so we have a plan to cut that number in half in the next 3 to 5 years, from 18 million to 9 million. So while that's working, though, at the same time, 100 million Americans, about 4 or 5 times the amount who don't have it at their home, do not subscribe even though it comes to their home. So that was one challenge the National Broadband Plan laid out for the country. It said, let's get to 90% by 2020. But Chairman Jenikowski and us at the FCC know a couple of things. Number one, government cannot do this alone. It's a one-to-one problem working with people in libraries and community centers across the country, number one. And number two, the government does not have unlimited resources, especially in the past few years. And so what the chairman did is challenge what he calls the broadband ecosystem, which is broadband providers, computer companies, people who work on digital literacy like librarians and people at community centers, and then also marketing to make sure people know the value of the internet to their lives. And what came together were a tremendous amount of commitments across this ecosystem, especially from the Washington staff of the American Library Association and from IMLS, the Institute for Museum and Library Sciences, but also Microsoft and Best Buy and the broadband providers to basically bring together a coalition to tackle this. This coalition can be housed in an independent nonprofit outside the FCC called Connect to Compete. So I want to talk to you first about what's going to be happening with Connect and Compete and how it relates to libraries, how the libraries are going to be a very close partner, especially when it comes to digital literacy aspects of the program. So talking about digital literacy, number one, and if I had a realistic magic wand, I would have asked for this, but it's actually going to happen. So what is going to happen is a nationwide ad council campaign on digital literacy. So think reading is fundamental, or think Smokey the Bear, but for digital literacy. So we are very excited about this. And the librarians have multiple seats at the table to shape this campaign. What it is going to do is call upon Americans to get up and get themselves digitally literate, to encourage them to seek training, to ask their friends to train them, their parents to train them, to go to libraries, go to community centers. It's going to ask people who are literate to train, people who are not literate to volunteer. And so it's going to be a major call to action. It's just coming together. There was the first meeting this week on it, and the librarians are there at the table to shape it. The second thing that's going to happen is, what is the call to action going to be? So one thing that we're developing is what's called the Digital Literacy Finder app. However, that's a terrible name, and we're looking for better names. But for now, the Finder app, what it's going to do is anyone who watches this campaign or hears about it can go text or call the 800 number or go online or go on their smartphone and find free local training sources. And what we're going to ask all the librarians across the country to do, because there's going to be thousands of these in the database, to go online, there's pamphlets here at the back of the room, at the front of the room, and also on connectcompete.org, which is to update the database with current information, as much as you want to put, about your local library, such as your URL for your training, schedule, you offer bilingual services for those with disabilities, advanced training, basic training, so that anyone can go online. It could be sort of like a Yelp or like a Starbucks coffee finder for digital literacy. So a couple other things we're doing is working on the Connect to Compete, working on capacity building and building a template for how states can scale up their digital literacy program. There's a grant that IMLS gave to OCLC, ABCD, EFG, OCLC, and
TechSoup, and the International City County Management Association.
Yes. And what junction? No? And what junction? So everyone's getting a piece of this grant, so everyone is thrilled. No, but seriously, it's going to be a wonderful effort to really figure out how to scale in light of the Outcomes campaign. How do we build out capacity? How do we work together across the community? United Way and 4-H and Boys and Girls Club are all part of this coalition. So how do we all kind of work together and leverage, you know, each other's resources? Connecting People will also be creating an online platform for training, for job search, for finding educational resources, for basic literacy online if you can't get to a local training center. Since the nonprofit is focused on broadband adoption as the ultimate goal and sees digital literacy as a, you know, path to that, there's also offerings for discounted broadband and PCs for free school lunch families, partnership with the broadband companies, and a refurbishment company called Redemtech. Comcast is offering a version of this program. Our interview in Comcast area. How many of you are Internet Essentials? So if Internet Essentials enables free school lunch families, so families with a kid that are eligible for free school lunch, who don't currently subscribe to Comcast, to get 995 internet with no contract, no modem for the first couple of years, and also $150 computers. It's something for you to be aware of. But you know, we're just thrilled to be here, and thank you so much for inviting me. We see librarians, even when people adopt broadband at home, obviously having an essential role in the community as a complement to home broadband adoption, as a community gathering center, as a place people to go for lifelong education, but also critical to help us close this broadband adoption gap of having 100 million Americans out there. So I think I got through what I wanted to say. So thank you so much for giving me a few minutes. And now it's time for the comedy hour. Is that what you're doing next?
Follow me outside.
I just wanted to thank Renee and the panel one more time, and thank all of you for participating in this conversation. And,
Adam, where did you get your ribbon? I love it.
Oh, yeah, it was just, it was at one of the booths downstairs.
Thank you for your
work.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Love it. I need that ribbon.
I was shaking my head completely because I didn't see my rural county.
Yeah.
So when you were talking about access,
yeah, that's right. Okay.
I know a librarian is Latino.
I have very
good. Okay, very
cool.
Yeah.
If I can pass by, I'll say hello.
Definitely, yeah. Please do. I'd love
thank
it.
You
thanks for coming. Thanks for saying hello. I'm moral.
Exactly. No, I was just going to say that. I was going to say, even though I'm covered,
what I do remember about it
is that it's like all day people, like, you can't really get data
about
the reference
time.
You know, it's really
energized.
Yeah.
And
I'm
doing that again. So thank you very much. Even though I can't agree with this report,
I can't remember what booth exactly. I remember it was like the human tourist alley. I don't know if
you might have
200 quad areas.
This is going to sound so ignorant. I'm from Illinois. I'm yes, I live so there, but I'm still not sure where San Mateo
so
is in relation to LA.
Thank you. It's
we're
in Vanhaya,
Morning Reed. I'm the state librarian of Vermont.
Oh, okay. So you're not local to us.
Oops.
I wonder if there's a way to possibly help with our research project next year. A bunch of us are jumping ship. I'm moving to new projects, but the Gates Foundation might fund us again. In which case, we might need some hands on deck. Let me give you my card.
No, your message was critical.
You can send me your resume and I'll forward it on.
Yes, I know them, but I haven't met
that's better
Renee
if it's
yet.
Digital.
But congratulations, really wonderful.
Because it'll be like an email to my boss.
I had nothing
well, good luck
putting
to
it
you.
Together or even thinking it up.
Good to see you
and
too.
It was
good
Laura
luck.
And Marika that came up with the idea and contacted
hi.
People, so they did a great job.
I didn't actually, no.
Sorry,
my doppelganger.
You look really familiar. I just tried to
place
why. I thought maybe it was that. So.
Jackson, Kentucky. I don't
know.
Yeah,
no, probably.
Yeah, well, I'm from Illinois.
Yeah, I spent time in Missouri. Were you at the University of Missouri at all?
No, I was in Massachusetts for
okay,
a bit.
Sorry. It must just be something else.
Well, thanks for coming up and saying that.
Oh, no, it was great. Thanks.
Thanks.
Yeah, okay. This is Joe from Ghana.
Nice to meet you, Joe.
West Africa.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I lived in Senegal.
Oh, Senegal.
I see.
Oh, I see. That's wonderful. I was looking at the pictures, you know, and And I had a little problem.
Yeah.
It's like the fourth quadrant where you have somebody, I think it changed by reading. And then the description below is analyze and evaluate. And I think there's a disconnect. You know, I can't imagine how a person can really evaluate and analyze if it's in change. You know, if it's so restricted, perhaps in thought, perhaps in view, perhaps in perception. I was just trying to think through it, the picture. I think there's a disconnect.
Well,
I really, yeah.
The idea was to problematize and get people to be critical about the representation of black men. That often the way that they're portrayed in mass media is as criminals. And for people to be critical about that, to stop and to think about, hey, wait a minute, why is it that every time I see a black man, and it's not enough proportionally in terms of, you know, who makes up America, that perhaps, I think the African American population in the States is about 13-15%, I might be wrong.
Yeah.
But the rate at which African American people are shown on television is below that. So that's a problem to begin with, that they're invisible more than they should be. And secondly, a problem is that when they do appear, that they're usually only depicted in these unsavory terms. And so associations are made in people's minds that a black person equals a criminal, or an Asian person equals a nerd, somebody who isn't cool but is really good at math, or a blonde person is stupid, or a Jewish person is neurotic. So those are the issues of representation that Renee was speaking about. That's a large part of communication studies. And the idea is to try to help people to analyze these images and to evaluate whether they're fair, what kind of biases are embedded in the images, what does it say, what consequences might it bring, what might we do to redress that, and to advocate for change, to demand that media makers are more sensitive to these issues, that they increase the diversity, these kinds of things. So that was looked upon as a very gross problem.
Okay. You see, I don't live in the United States.
Yeah.
I live all the way back in Africa.
Yeah.
Right. And my thinking is that, you see, at this digital age, you see, I think that is a context in which we are trying to think. We are situating it, right, in that context. And I think that at this stage, you see, when we have such pictures, you see, we are rather reinforcing. You see,
exactly.
we are reinforcing those negative values,
exactly,
or those negative things that have been associated with colored people, or for that matter, right. But I think that the little that I've seen over here, right, and the perhaps opportunities that are available,
mm-hmm,
for even all, you know, including colored people, is such that if they would rather take advantage, you see, of the opportunities available, right, such images, you see, would no longer be associated with the black. For example, now you even have a black person who's a president of the United States. You see, so I think that some of these views are stereotypical. You know, they've been around for a long time, and it's about time we share those things off. You know, and then right, and then,
mm-hmm,
and then reassert our values. You know, as black people who are over here and have now, you know, descended onto a different platform. Though there are difficulties. Well, I don't live here, but maybe when I finish, we have been transported onto a different platform, right? That if we can take advantage of, we can even be seen as progressing. These things are there. I was watching some a program the last time, and I saw then they announced the death of this gentleman in California who was beaten some time ago.
Rodney King.
Rodney King. Right, way back.
Well,
right.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah. Well, in the '90s.
Right.
You see,
right.
And look at where he rose even to before his death. Right. You know, look at the talented guys, 50 Cent and those people. You can see.
I mean, he got famous because
he bought into
that stereotypical representation, though.
So even though, we have these challenges, right, I think that the opportunities are such that, they have advanced, and so we should rather drop such images and then portray such people in a different light, that at the moment the opportunities are there. You see, we even have a black president who is even struggling to move the system. That's what I think. I think that we agree with each other.
Are both frustrated by the prevalence of stereotypical images. That why are we holding on to these outdated representations when we know that there's so much more to people and that there's so many more stories to be told. So we're not advocating for that image. We're saying that image is still out there people who are not with it.
Okay.
And we have to help people to raise their consciousness,
okay,
to deconstruct that image and to protest.
Okay.
Yeah.
I understand it.
Yeah.
I have
so we agree.
Good. I'm so much impressed, honestly.
Oh, good.
I'm so much impressed. But I was thinking that perhaps could have been another twist, to this program. I was thinking that the program will address, the program will address the current technologies. You see, that librarians could avail themselves of, in retooling libraries. For example, now we have Android phones.
Right.
Android phones, we have iPad, right? And then all these, are tools that could enhance librarians' skills. So I thought there could be a resource person who will talk about, how to use smartphones to connect to libraries, because that is where we have reached.
Right, that practical advice would be helpful to you.
Good.
I hear what you're saying.
But I didn't get that, and it was a bit disappointing to me. Because, back home, you see, one of the panelists was talking about our aspirations. And then, in practice, where we are.
Right.
Where do we aspire to be?
Right.
And where are we now?
Right.
You see, so what's the gaps and the challenges?
Yes.
So I was thinking that, apart from funding and other things, the little that we have, we could put them together to retool,
Right, well,
here's
my response to that.
Yeah.
That I feel like a lot of that practical information in terms of lists and how-to guides and videos are available online. And that can be something I feel like people can access themselves for the contexts that fit them the best. And the fact is that all of this tangible stuff... Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you. I would want to have a photo opportunity. When I get back, I'll show it to them.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, the thing is,
library for you. Oh, you see the other part? You want your picture with her?
Yeah.
Wow, so
And maybe I'll invite some the rest of the panelists.
Oh, well, let's do the two of you while we got you together.
Okay, thanks, Kimberly.
Because you're color coordinated, too. Did you look at this? Well,
no,
I can come in and
do this.
I'm color coordinated. Okay, you came out good. Okay, you'll just stand next to Renee. Okay.
Yeah, Renee. This is Joe from West Africa, Ghana.
Oh, you might as well get into that. Okay, we've got you.
She did it. Thank you.
All right.
All right, thank you. So, anyway. I was sharing a few thoughts with Gloria and
absolutely. And are you going to be at the LDC event in D.C. July 9 and 10 for the Gates Foundation?
What's LDC?
I'm not
probably
sure.
Not.
That was the subject
I'm definitely
line.
Not going to be.
Okay.
LDC.
I might be calling it the wrong thing, but our program at USC was funded by the Gates Foundation. So my supervisor and I are going to be doing a little show and tell.
Oh, good. I would love to know who it is.
No kidding.
The College Readiness Division. We're working with Andrea Foggy Paxton.
I don't know if you're aware, but the U.S. State Department is...
So College Ready, Andrea...
I believe her name is hyphenated. I think it's Foggy. Yeah, you know her?
Yes.
Oh, okay, great.
I know her a little bit. I know College Ready. I don't know Andrea that well, but I should know. Yeah, I do know her. But I just really liked your talk. We did a kind of a vision session with the state libraries the past two or three days, and one of the things that they were talking about is just one of the ideas that came up was we want happiness. We want it to be a place of happiness.
Yeah.
And you're bringing fun into the discussion, which of course fits in with the exploration and the creativity and all of those points. I think that between your comments and Renee's, you just kind of raised things up quite a bit, and I think we've got a number of options on how we can move things forward. I just want to make sure I can find you.
Yeah,
I'd
love
card,
to
right?
be in touch. I did get your card.
We love your program.
I'm glad. Thank you for coming. It was nice to have such a good group, and thank you for getting everybody moving. Always good to have somebody who's worked with children. I don't have a natural gift. I'm always quite serious. I'm very sincere.
Yeah.
Here, let's have this conversation.
Which is lovely too. That's great.
I know, but it's wonderful to have the openness. So thank you, and thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah,
that was kind of a last minute addition.
You were?
Thanks, friend. Yeah.
Well, we wanted somebody. We had been looking to try and identify somebody in the local area that had been engaged with digital content creation. We wanted to cover that end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. So. It wasn't completely last minute, but we were trying to figure out who did we know in the immediate area. So we were very lucky to
see you. I'm
glad I got to meet you, and I will see you sometime again, I'm sure.
I really hope so.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, right.
Exactly. I know. But if so,
we've all got it.
That's right. Yeah. I'm going to head that way.
Yeah. So are you a librarian?
I went to library school, but I have not worked in a library setting. I work at the American Library Association, and I've been there to think on. So I went to library school while I was at ALA, and so I haven't worked in a library setting.
So how do you feel like your education has enriched your ability to do your job?
It's an interesting thing. I actually didn't feel like it helped me do my job all that much, honestly.
It's very interesting, yes.
Because I felt like I was a constant learning situation with my colleagues. Thank you so much, and I'm sorry for the last minute change in the plan.
I don't have your contact, and I want to... Still communicate with
you. That would be great. And I hope to come to Africa and see my friends soon.
Okay, good. All right.
Sorry, it was not... Anyway...
If I had known,
I'll reply.
Right.
That's
right.
Me.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll
here, and let me give you one other resource.
Good.
Yeah, exactly.
My name is Joe.
Joe.
Yeah, Joe. So when you see Joe, that's me.
Okay. And there is my website.
Good. Oh, okay.
Right. Shameless self
promotion. Thank you so much.
That's what it. You gotta have it.
I know.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Nice to meet you. Yeah.
All right. Thank you for coming.
See you. All right.
I didn't realize this was thematic.
Nice. Very nice.
That's great. This is marketing. Bye, Joe.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Have you wished you'd gotten an MBA?
No.
No.
No. I mean, I came from a communications background.
Did you get a library message or not a library message?
I did.
You did? Okay.
Brilliant.
I did, too. It's adorable.
It's really great.
Ooh. Where did these come from? I think they're still in the art fresh paint. They're delicious.
Are these from the ones that you had in the program?
Yeah. We had them left over, so I just keep handing them.
But there were library ones?
Yeah, like, there were two sets. We started out the program. You opened the fortune cookie, it was a regular fortune cookie, and you had to say how that fortune related to the future of libraries.
Mm-hmm.
And then we ended the program with custom fortune cookies that had library messages.
That is very clever.
Libraries where communities go to know and grow. And then I ended up with, there's only three messages, so we have to repeat some.
I have libraries, the sound foundation for a strong community.
Okay, we didn't have a fun one.
You brought the fun by being so whimsical with fortune cookies. Yeah, making them think on their feet. How does this relate?
It was a good exercise.
Bye, Glenn.
So how's it looking?
They like it.
How do you envision using this?
What do you think? You will get them too.
Okay, here, I'll read the ones that you've already put down, so we can get to it.
But WISL became, which one became independent education?
Ames is Ames, and
WISL became.
That's a complicated community.
But there's some outstanding people, Kate Craver.
Yeah, I'm not very familiar.
The school is
off the chart.
Yeah, everything about the culture.
So these are some local people doing cool stuff around. I'm going to remember that they're the Sandy Spring Librarians.
If you go to the website,
they're
only
two
like
the play.
And two of us are right there.
Use your website all the time because I so want my kids to go there.
Okay, you should,
why don't
you give us feedback about that?
Do you see that? This is doable. I love it.
Adorable.
Yeah.
Baby steps. You know, come have lunch with us one day. Don't even go through.
We have so much to learn.
We'll take it to the cafeteria.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're the reason that I went to PhD school, and then I didn't come and visit Temple. I'm really kicking myself for that.
Oh, you got the best gig going right now, girl. Just get out and start to be the assistant professor. All right.
Yeah.
Don't be delaying. Get done. Are you going to be done? What's your timetable? You want to go get a drink?
Yeah, I'd love to get a drink. I had hoped that's what would happen. I remember how you were double fisting last
time. I fully intend on doing that now.
Perfect.
Although I do have to prep for my ISTE thing, but that's okay. I can still.
Oh, really?
That's
funny. So their daughter.
Hmm.
First, Anna did, but Sarah did. Sarah did, but Emma didn't.
Yeah, see, I I must have seen 5 or 6 incidents since I've arrived at librarians who had skill problems, like really fundamental skill problems.
From West Town, 83?
Just in terms of,
my husband graduated in
78.
Oh, and I thought there might have been.
My brother was there then. Actually, it's just them training each other. They're best and brightest technology people.
You know what? Because my brother was 79 and he worked on the yearbook.
So they need
so we had all the
people from the other fields to join them.
Please.
No, that's okay. So I think that's what I'm feeling. What I'm seeing here is they know need to learn more.
And that's what that gal with the orange scarf said.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
I know Phil Walsh.
I mean, I know, yeah, I do.
A colleague of mine was helping a teacher to do some of this play stuff, and they met with the tech guy at her school, and it was the first time that the teacher had ever met the tech guy. She'd been there for years. And my colleague said after he left, she had to disabuse her of a few notions. He'd actually given some bad information.
We call it a professional duty. That's okay.
We actually,
I can look at your
library. Wow. And one of the things that our school is trying very hard to do is find non-tuition.
Yeah, that's a good, that's a good, right. So there you go. That's
have to keep
raising
tuition. Really big jumps in tuition. And so,
how will we get to where we're going in time before it's too late? The sense of urgency. They definitely got the sense of urgency.
Yeah.
I need to and they got them digitally play. Literate.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting. One of the other people was just like, how do we, for people, there are librarians that don't want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And how do the rest of us help, mm-hmm. you know, when, you know, like basically... The reality is not all entrenched library staffers want to be digital literacy teachers. How do we give our patrons what they need when only a few of us can deal with their issues? Like, is that, a, I mean, is it acceptable in any, you know, that you don't want to do this job?
Yep, well, but that's
you know, that, I mean, and I know that's the reality.
That is the reality they experience.
Absolutely.
They are, that's right. The staff is refusing.
Exactly. So they've got one or two people who are
carrying the whole load.
Exactly.
And you know what? Until the organization owns that, acknowledges that, identifies that a problem, and makes that an agenda, then we'll just be you'll be saying, oh, we're doing all this great stuff. And then everybody on the ground will know, no, you're not. Because of those people.
And those are the funny because it's also, you know, the same thing. Well, and I imagine you might have heard some of this at SLJ, you know, which I would very much like to hear about, is, you know, that this you know, because I'm kind of like, look, we are carrying the ball. We are saying as much positive stuff as possible.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as your membership organization, that's our job, you know.
Right.
However, there are deeper, bigger issues that we also have to engage in, you know.
That's right. No, I think that's right. And the, and what was sad was to see how the opportunity, which could have really made ALA look like, yes, we are part of a collaborative team, and we want to make this, we want to pie grow bigger, and we're so delighted that the FCC wants to support the Digital Literacy Geek Corps, and this is a great opportunity. Instead of that being the message, what about us? Where's the money for us? I was like, God.
Yeah.
You know? So I think... again, they're the fear, right? Like they're starving. They're starving, and they can't. This is some cool idea, but they're starving. They see their at the end of the world is coming, so it's hard for some of them. How do we train the librarians to be experts and feel comfortable with all the new technology? So the organization ALA needs to be doing that. Well, why is ALA not doing that?
Well, you know what's interesting. I mean, and I mean, so OITP is not, you know.
Sure, you guys aren't responsible for that.
No, no. So I know when I have conversations with Alan, Alan's like, no.
Right.
So
sure.
And where we had seen the gap was really within public libraries because they have not traditionally had this role, unlike school and academic, where they're much more, you know, that was part of their job description, you know. But it's, you know, that's where the CE has traditionally taken place is with them.
Got it. So there's some inequities going on amongst your within your communities around who's generally gotten kind of with the program or who's gotten more exposure to these ideas.
I think so. And, you know, what is the role, you know, and we had talked about this, and one of the people on the task force had said that she's like, you know, she's like, it felt like when she was reading the draft of the primer that we'd kind of given up on to the library schools, you know, MLS. And I'm like, no, we just haven't figured out a way to talk about it because we don't have, you know, somebody other than you right now. Like, what is happening and what do library schools need to be doing?
That's
you know?
The question.
Right.
And that really is, so that's, you know, kind of foundationally.
That's right.
And, you know, and we didn't put it in the permit because we didn't know the answer. So we didn't want to assume this is happening or this isn't happening. We honestly don't know. And so I don't know if there's a survey out there that says, you know, are you teaching digital literacy? or are you calling it something else? Like, how are you preparing?
Well, and even if they are they doing it right?
Right, exactly. That's right.
Well, I think what's, and that's, the reason why Laurel's point is so good is that because librarians have had to be advocates and have developed a very sophisticated language of advocacy. Mm-hmm. They're very good at telling you how they're doing everything.
That's okay. That's
everything they're doing, everything is great, and they're doing everything, and everything's great.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually working against, that's exacerbating the gap. Because at the ground level, we see, no, not really, but they talk. Is all everything is
well, and it's uneven, right? Like, I mean, there's always those exemplars that really are.
They are.
Like,
that's right, exactly.
They really are doing
and do they get a lot of attention?
Joyce Valenza.
Right. Exactly.
She gets so
that's
much
right.
attention, well, and it's like I've never been to a library school, a library program like that ever.
Right.
Anywhere.
Exactly. And there's a handful of them. That's you know, there. But it's so it's like how do we fill that gap, right? Between these leaders and people who have no interest and no time and are completely disengaged.
And that is a gap.
You know, they need to go. But there's this whole group of people that came here today who are in the middle who want
right.
to do
that's
and
right.
don't know how and don't know where they can turn and how do we who is responsible many who's you know it's ALA it's
right.
the library schools it's the libraries themselves investing in continuing education because this issue doesn't stand still so how do we you know and is this you know is this one of our topics for the national conversation you know because we haven't locked them down I mean that's one of the things that we were thinking of is this part
use
of
these.
The question.
Yeah.
You know,
let's use these for
that's, I think
our,
I think it's a good
this is grassroots.
Idea, you know, to
yeah.
kind of
that's
say,
right.
This is what we heard.
Yep.
Help continue the conversation.
Yeah.
That'd be the next
yeah.
one. I mean, I'm still really interested in the assessment piece and the outreach,
yeah.
but I
yeah.
think really
the next step.
You know, fear.
Yep.
You know, or like, you know, how do
yep.
we get from where we are now to where we are going? Or I don't know what the right thing is, but I think
yeah,
we use this to help create
mm-hmm.
it because this is where people were at when they came here.
This is awesome. We can also just count these and see how many people were in the room.
Yeah.
This,
I mean, yeah, it was a well attended event.
Oh
sure was.
Yeah.
I mean, we can do a
What I'm thinking about is an approach to social and behavior change called positive deviance.
Mm-hmm.
You know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What's positive deviance?
About 200 people, I got.
Wow.
And not everybody, because some people left before.
Cool.
Glad you had the cards. Thank you
yeah.
for doing the
sure,
card thing.
Sure.
Everything
yeah.
worked
well, when
out
we were
really
thinking
well.
About how could we
yeah.
have it be a conversation
yeah.
analog,
fantastic.
This was kind of where we ended up. So.
And it was interactive, and it's, you know, a cognitive tool when you write it down.
Yeah,
you
no, and it was
remember.
Great. Like, I was just
fantastic.
Like, I remember that we needed these, but I don't remember exactly what we're doing with them. Thank you for having the pedagogical, like, okay, this is what we're going to do. Hallelujah.
Well, and thank you for stepping into the pedagogical
right.
space
yeah,
around
exactly.
who's in the room
that's
and why
right.
are you here and what do you need to get
yeah,
out of
it. Yeah, it was also really good.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
right.
Well, you inspired me,
yeah.
too, by speaking so well and putting it in those terms that you can understand and having stage presence and...
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, it's a good. I think it's a
good
start. Yeah,
stakeholders. Too,
yeah, it
right?
was, and I think yeah. and that's part
Different
of what's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, is
yeah.
I think it's rare at ALA, and I think it's rare in the profession that we spend a lot of time talking to ourselves.
Yeah.
And there's good learning to happen there, but we have to be talking outside of that. And I think there's some good other people like working in. PCCs and
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of community based,
mm-hmm.
you know, like just as passionate as anyone here,
yep.
coming at it from their own,
yep.
you know, kind of heart,
yep.
that I think would like to be part of this.
And the
so,
local access was when I went to the session that I presented at, they almost every one of these were grant funded digital literacy projects,
yes.
and almost all of them involved. Libraries hiring artists and activists to come in and do projects like Real Girls in Seattle and all this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, so librarians are getting, you don't have to be able to
do
all of this yourself.
No,
and that
no.
really is a huge
and
change.
And the kids do it.
Right, that's right. Well, and a lot of librarians are having the kids do it, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, they see it. I mean,
yeah.
particularly the parents. They're like,
yeah.
well, they're teaching me at home. I may as well just have them teach everybody here.
Right,
you know,
right, right.
So, and, but, you know, then you get run into this is like this deprofessionalization. That's where we, you know, people are like, well, we can't have them, you know, because they don't have, you know, and there's got to be a
so
way to navigate,
you know that's
there's
a culture and a values discussion.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think it's a big part of some of this. It's
yeah.
just like, what do we, and what, where do we what do we have to do, and how can we let go of other stuff and make it stronger? Yeah.
I think that librarians have to be inquiry guides and, you know, motivate and support and help them to ask good questions and to keep on going.
Well, and for public library level, to go from that triage space where, the, you know, somebody comes in and they have a burning information need, and then how do you translate that to learning, you know, where they don't stop at the information. They're like, I have to upload my resume today. Help me. You know, it's like, okay, we're going to help you do that, and I'm going to invite you to blah, 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 blah. Like, let's, you know, how do you take them so that they actually become more independent learners as, you know, so, you know, there's a lot. How do we, you know, so the next thing, you know, but so hopefully we'll come into a space on Sunday where we can kind of map out and, you know, like next week start calling people or whatever, you know, figure out like how to do the next one based on this.
Well, don't you think we can have Laurel back to do one of the conversations?
I would love to have Laurel involved.
Yeah, I would love to have Laurel involved. So the plan is we'll do like two or three conversations in a, some kind of an online space.
I think so.
Some kind of space where we sort of take some of these problems and drill down in a little bit and widen the net to try to reach the folks who weren't in this room but who probably want to be. And then, because you're going to have two more opportunities.
Well, I think it just
one on Tuesday. There's several places where the DigiLit 12 people come together.
Right. So it's our working meeting on Sunday, and then a more like toolkit on the ground of how you do it from A to Z on Monday morning.
And the thing would be cool like about these cards is these cards should divide up into three or four topics.
I think that's
I loved those topics. I hope you didn't think I was being critical when I said
No, absolutely. I think the reality of it is that it is complicated.
Yeah, it is a complicated agenda. I thought that, and it was really interesting to me personally, that conversation about kind of, you know,
should there be a definition or not?
Should there be a definition kill it, you know, and then, or, but I think the real problem, I mean, the practical problem that I'm particularly interested in, that I hope will be part of a national conversation, although it may be too practical for a good conversation, is around how that issue relates to assessment. Because everything that we've been doing, when we talk to people, they aren't assessing anything at all. Right. And it's killing us. You know, because how do you show impact?
And you can't assess without defining
that. Exactly. So that's the thing. So that's really...
Well, and part of my concern is I don't want the ad council going out with a mass media message that says digital literacy is turning on the computer.
Exactly.
Right. Which it easily would be of those four things because of who's going to be at the table.
Right. Well, and who they... And how they see the people that they're trying to reach. They see, you know, low income people that, you know, are afraid and we're going to help them. Just, you know, it's also their vision of who they're trying to reach.
You're right. You're right.
So,
yeah, it should be fascinating.
Well, I have two responses to that. One, how do you assess without a definition? And how do we get people who aren't dyed-in-the-wool assessors, researchers to do it? There's a technique called most significant change. Oh, it's super fun. All you do is ask people to talk about or to draw the most significant change that occurred for them as a result of their engagement in the intervention. So how did their life change? So they can either tell a story about that, they can write out the story about that, or they can draw a before picture and an after picture.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So you have them self-assess how they perceived the impact.
Right. And that way...
sure, you're not imposing a set of artificial criteria on what you think they should have learned.
Absolutely. And maybe some of the changes are in spheres that we perceive as tangential or even wholly disconnected.
Yeah, but that are really important, like collaboration. So the only thing you write about is, wow, I really learned how much I have to learn from other people.
Right.
That and has nothing to do with technology.
Right.
Has everything to do with what you needed to learn.
Right.
And truly relates to absolutely everything.
Communicating and connecting.
That's it.
You know?
Yeah.
Because anecdotally, that's what we do here. You know, it's like, oh, it helped me connect with my grandkid.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what I learned. I learned how to talk to my grandkid over Skype. You know?
And that's
an amazing thing.
That's right.
And it's helpful, this idea, because we were talking about it at the State Library Agency, because they were talking about rapid prototyping and how librarians, you know, like we have to have a committee, and, you know, so how do we generate change more quickly and accept failure and move to, you know, publicize success so that we can continue to just kind of march forward as quickly as possible, as opposed to just being thinking about everything for too long before we can address anything. And they were saying, well, how do you assess within rapid prototyping? And I think what the way that we talked about it, so that it doesn't kill it,
right,
you know,
right.
so that you have
right.
the creativity.
So it doesn't kill
and
it.
One of the things that we talked about is kind of like, you know, what did you learn? What would you do differently?
Yep.
And what was a significant impact of the program?
There
like, that's
go.
It. So that, you know, that was so that every three questions, you know, so that you're able to go to pilot rapid prototype without killing it, but that you also have some kind of assessment that you can at least take something from it. So.
And those perspectives from people on the ground can also help you to appreciate overlooked indicators.
Right.
So they might be things that are in the contextual environment that are tangible, but we don't have the insider expertise to be able to recognize
exactly.
them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And
you know,
we can see that they actually are a big contributory factor to people's.
Absolutely.
That's right.
So all of a sudden the kids talk about how people, how their peers are reading on the school bus
totally
home.
Cool.
You know, there's a library.
Oh, you were
talking
about
right. And so that's not only the story, but that's
like
also something discrete. Positive deviance. So somehow there always seems to be an exceptional outlier who persists despite the odds. Some person manages to get it done without access to special resources. So it's our task to locate those individuals, confirm that indeed they do not have special resources that can help to explain how they got to where they are. And figure out what it is that got them to where they are, operationalize that, and then that is the marching orders for the people in the community.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And of course, but that's probably going to be for a lot of this people is the role of the parent. Okay.
Probably.
Yeah.
But maybe other factors.
I already invited her.
I'm happy to be recruited.
Unfortunately, we have to go to another meeting.
Because
I had wanted to hear what
you
were saying.
I know. Well, we still have more to say or more to hear from you, Renee. But we're supposed to be at this other e-content meeting.
Go. Gotta do it.
So, a mile and a half away, sadly. I mean, if it were next door, we could just continue to chat.
No, take care of that. Yeah. Renee and I have to drink, so it's fine.
I would really much rather do that.
I wish you could.
Yeah.
Well, you have to go and be professional.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that. We'll do our best.
Right. Thank you, Renee.
Yeah.
So, Renee, we'll see you at our meeting tomorrow. Is that the case?
Now I'm going to ISTE.
You're leaving before our meeting.
I'm going to meet with Karen Archer-Perry at 8 o'clock, and then I'm driving to...
Okay. Oh,
you won't see
me. I'm driving down to San Diego.
Okay. So we'll just
be my next speech.
So you, but you'll figure it out and let me know what you discovered.
Yeah. Good. Well, thank you so much.
Been a pleasure.
Be in touch.
So good to meet you.
Great.
Thank
Thanks a lot, Lynn.
So I'm really glad that you were able to swing by and
me
do
too.
It. And,
this was a blast.
And that it worked out. Well, I guess we're at least headed in the same direction briefly.
Right.
We're getting out.
We're heading to
the door.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Out the door.
You can tell it's really nice out, but you don't get to enjoy it.
It's actually gorgeous. Yeah, I mean, it couldn't be.
It was hot.
Pretty much everyone I talked to, it was hot. Yeah, there was a heat wave here too.
Really?
Or at least here.
For here.
Right. It did break. But there were a couple of
sports. Well, maybe it started here because it's in the Midwest, but then it was coming here on Wednesday. So maybe if it just left here before we were in the Midwest and DC,
we were running around Pasadena Sunday morning on the scavenger hunt, and it was sweltering. Yeah, it was fun. Although it felt a little stressful.
I think that would be fun. It's a competition.
I did want to say one thing. The state librarian who's on our test list, she's new to it. But she said that this program was the best, not one of the best, but the best that she's been to. So, whatever that's worth, she was really moved.
That's what she said to your face.
I know. She could have said, this was great.
Yeah.
you know, but...
No, but I was goading her into the superlative zone.
Over there.
Oh, you live here,
yeah, yeah. I park at the Marriott, so it's like that way. So, very close. No worries. There are a few kids.
Are you
have
other?
I was just gonna say. No, I don't. I left the night open because it was my dream to hang out with you.
No, that's your whole story about
what you're working on. Oh, well, I'm back in action. I've taken over the whole Rhode Island school. Oh, my God. Congratulations. When I met you, you were at Babson.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. What do you need?
fantastic.
We
played
camping. And we went down to the ocean and we did ritual things, ritual reflection. We had so much fun.
Sure, but I think this is really, really, really.
Thanks for the lift.
We just have to get out of ALA land.
Yeah, totally. Put your hair down.
It was a strange little kerfuffle.
Oh, yeah?
That happened. Which I'm really, now that I lived through it and watched it play out, I'm now realizing how useful it was for me to see it happen, because it kind of sheds, you know, I mean, I don't know how I got, I got entry into this world as kind of like a critical friend, and so, you know, that's really my identity. I'm an outsider, but they somehow, like, tolerate me, and So I don't know if you heard about this little kerfuffle, but basically, you remember Matt Richtel's been doing these amazing pieces in the Times about, you know, digital divide issues, and he's annoying the hell out of all of us with it's not all as gee-whizzy as you think it is, and there are kids who are, you know, basically being disturbed by their experience with technology.
Blah, blah, blah. Great.
And in that piece that came 2 weeks ago, there's a little reference to the FCC's Digital Literacy Core that says some of the E-rate money, $200 million, some chunk of money, is going to go to build a geek core, kind of like AmeriCorps, which I had it in my action plan. People have been talking about it in Washington for like 2 years. There's nothing new about this.
What?
Well, the school are the beleaguered sad sacks of the organization of ALA. The K-12 school librarians are the dysfunctional families, and all dysfunctional families, they went on to the blogosphere and beat the crap out of Matt Richtel and ALA and said things like, I think I'm not going to be a member of ALA, because if ALA thinks it's a good idea for the FCC to hire college students to do this digital literacy shit, when the money should come to us, why isn't that $200 million coming to fund our librarians? Because our librarians are getting their jobs cut, and they're losing their jobs, and that's really a shame, because why the hell did these college kids get, and they can't do it, the college kids, they don't, blah, 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 blah. And they're crapping all over the FCC. They're crapping all, so they're writing to Jenna Chowski, okay? They're writing to Matt Richtel, and they're writing to ALA canceling their membership.
Great.
Okay, so Lara and Marika, who are the Washington office, who are doing this delicate dance with the FCC, right? Because Julius is about to lose his job, and he wants to be able to say he did something, and you know what? He doesn't have a fucking good legacy at all. He didn't do goddamn shit at the FCC. And he wants to, before he retires, he wants to be able to say something like, I helped kids get digital literacy. He wants that.
And he's friends with Jeff Cowan and the folks at Common Sense.
Oh, he needs to be able to have a something. That's right.
Right.
He needs to have a something that he can say, see, when I was at the FCC, I wasn't just a tool for Verizon and Comcast. Because that's what it's going to look like if he doesn't do something.
Yeah.
And he wants this so bad. And yeah, you know, anyway, so the librarians crap all over everybody, and it's a big kerfuffle, and now today, the School Library Journal, which is the newspaper for the school library people, which is brings a group of people together saying, like, why don't we analyze what happened here to try to understand what's really going on, because obviously we got a problem.
That sounds reasonable.
And it's a very frank conversation. And what becomes really obvious is they're so defensive. They're so fearful and defensive. And they feel such a profound sense of loss for what
that
was. That any, that they can't, they can't even, they're kind of backward looking. I mean,
well,
they're traumatized.
They're circling around their wagon.
It's traumatized. It's a trauma. Yeah. It's post-traumatic stress.
That's right. They're survivors. These people managed to hold on to their jobs. They saw a lot of good men go down.
Yeah, they did. Exactly.
Well,
the metaphor is very good.
Yeah. And now the engines are coming.
Yeah.
In the form of these college students.
Yeah.
And they've got their wagon circle and they're standing out there with their guns.
Yeah, and they're afraid it's just going to be like the Apple Genius guys, and it's just going to be like the Best Guy guys, and all they're going to want to do is sell us stuff, right? Mm. And it'll be all corporate blah, blah, blah.
Well.
And so, you know, they got a point there.
Yeah, I know.
So, I'm trying to see like a place that's going to serve. Not, it's like, this is so plastic. This is such a plastic place. It's like, where to go? Everything is so
gross. Well, you want me to
yup something.
Quick!
Yup something.
Oh my gosh!